Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Jerry Idzik is going to be with us in just a little bit. He told us, and I probably didn't mention this earlier in the hour, I knew that he wasn't going to be here for the first few minutes of this segment, maybe not even until the beginning of the next segment, but he's in Washington, D.C., and I knew that he was going to take him a little longer to get to the office than ordinary today. So anyway, you and I are going to continue to march because I've got some things I want to talk about along the lines of, in fact, off of Kiplinger's first page. And that's with regard to the current forecasts that they have. And I don't know if you've seen this. If you're a subscriber, you know what I'm talking about. On every first page of their letter, the Kiplinger Washington letter, the flagship letter, every one of those, they have a little box. It's a current forecast box, and it'll have different things in there, different categories of forecasts in there every week, and it's really very nice. The graphics they have and the topics they have, it's very handy, and I want to talk about some of those right now. The first one is GDP, gross domestic product, and first I want to point out that, and I've said this, I think, earlier this week, but I want to say it again because I can't say it too much. Small business owners, you continue to amaze and impress. I hope that you know how proud I am of you and how proud the world is of you, even if they don't always tell you, and how proud you should be of yourself. Because think about this, folks. The U.S. economy is $11 trillion. That's the GDP of the United States, $11 trillion. The next closest economy is Japan, and it's less than half of that. It's about 4.5 or 6 trillion, maybe close to 5. But in the United States, American small businesses, as a group, you and me together, produce over half of that $11 trillion. Now think about that, small business owners. I know you're out there with one employee, maybe, or no employees. Maybe you're the charmed pork, as Rich Galen calls it. You're all by yourself. And I've been there. I have been there, I promise you. But, or if you got 100 employees, regardless, you and all of your brethren and sistren out there, small business owners, combined as a class, produce over half of the U.S. economy, and the growth. You're responsible for most of the growth of this economy. And that's where the GDP is. One of the reasons why you are, one of the reasons why our gross domestic product is still remaining strong after, you know, even though we're having some hits from interest rates, we're having some hits from petroleum, from our the gasoline prices are hurting us right now. But I'm just so proud of you, and I hope you know that. I hope you recognize that. If today's a day when you're thinking, okay, I got payroll in a couple of days, how am I going to make that? Or if you're having any days where you're thinking, you know, does any of this mean anything? Am I making a difference? Does any of this help? Well, let me tell you something. It does. Everything that you do not only makes a difference to yourself, to your own family, but to the employees that you hire, their families. It's an aggregation effect that we all play a part in. And I just want you to never minimize that, because right now you are, as a group, you and I and other small business owners, the millions of small business owners out there, and our employees, of which I think the number is around 60 million of American workers are employed by small business owners. All those folks are creating half of our GDP, which right now, by the way, is being forecast to be around 3.7% growth this year. Now, it was about 4.4 in 2004, which was a really good year, but that was a catch-up year. That was a pent-up demand year, not last year was. This year is more of a maintenance kind of a year, more of a settling down year, and it's going to be less than 4%, which I forecast, if you remember, in my predictions for this year. I predicted that we would end the year at 4% growth, and I haven't changed that. I still believe that we could reach that 4% growth. But I do think that it needs to be 4% or less, because that's the kind of solid growth that we can manage without getting overheated, and that's healthy, manageable, and solid growth. And as I say, the about 3.7 this year is what Kiplinger says it's going to be. I still say it's going to be 4, because I think we're going to have a great third quarter and maybe even a better fourth quarter. But Kiplinger says 2006 GDP is going to be around 3%. They're still saying it's going to be off a little bit. And I think maybe, and we'll ask Jerry Idizac this question when he joins us, but I think maybe that may be because of the compounding effect of the petroleum. I don't think we're going to have any abatement at all in petroleum prices. I think they're going to remain high. We're going to have high interest rates. They're not going to be lowering those. So I think all of that's going to accumulate and probably dampen the economy down to about 3%. I understand Jerry is with us right now. Jerry Idizac is associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jerry, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim.
It's good to have you back. Thanks for joining me. I was just saying, as you may have heard, one of the reasons why I'm thinking that Kiplinger is forecasting a little bit of an off year next year, 3% next year as opposed to maybe 3.7 this year in GDP, is probably because of the accumulation effect of petroleum and maybe higher interest rates. What do you think?
Briefly, an off year of 3% would be the historical average of the last 20, 25 years.
And double that of Europe.
Yeah, so we have to keep it relative. But you're entirely right. We think that the Fed is clearly on a path of continuing to raise interest rates, not just the 10th move yesterday, but we see 11, 12, and possibly 13 by year end.
Holy mackerel.
And that's going to have an effect, as your business listeners know. And persistently high energy prices with, I keep getting stunned as I drive my little Corolla into a gas station and it's $25 to fill up a tank.
Right.
And it's not even an SUV. So,
right.
That's going to have a dampening effect.
I paid
too,
$2.43 yesterday.
$2.43, that's pretty good out our way.
Yeah, well, it's pretty, this is, flyover America, that's pretty high. And Jerry, stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with our good friend Jerry Idizac, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. He and I are going to continue the tour of this week's Kiplinger letter. You don't want to miss this. 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back.
You don't know what you got until it's gone. And I found out.
Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter and check out the blog. Jim's blog is there. And also, you can go straight there to the blog if you want by going to jimsblog.biz, jimsblog.biz. Jerry Idizac is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Many of you who are subscribers to Kiplinger have gone back into the bowels of the website and read some of the more detailed reporting that they do on the little snippets, as Willard Kiplinger used to call them, little snippets they have on their letter. You've gone back into the bowels of the website and you've read some of these longer pieces and you've seen this name, Jerry Idizac. He's a very prolific contributor to many things that Kiplinger posts for their clients, and so I know you recognize that name. He's, as I said, I think he's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Jerry, we're talking about the economy, and one of the things you guys point out early on in the letter this week is that we can't expect much relief on costs. That next year, even though the economy is slowing, costs probably are not going to slow up as much. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, we look at elements like business costs on a regular basis, not just once a year, but we try to do a summary around this time to help people who are planning their budgets for the next calendar year.
Right.
And we look typically at try to look at some of the large items, obviously wage, salaries, health care, energy, cost of money, which is a significant cost, rents. And, you know, the picture we see is shouldn't surprise your listeners, and that is inching upward in some areas and of course, in energy, more than an inch, or like a galloping up.
Right.
But we see wages and salaries going up a little bit more next year than this year, like around the neighborhood of 3.5%.
And one of the reasons is because, as our economists are telling us now, more and more of them, Jerry, and that is that we're approaching, if we aren't already at, full employment. And therefore, to get the good people that we need to grow our businesses, we've got to go out and find those people who are already working, get them to encourage them to come over to work for us, or we have to keep the people that we don't want to lose. And even though we know that money, compensation, is not the big reason why people come to work for you or leave you, it is an important factor, and that's going to increase payroll, isn't it, Jerry?
Yeah, I talked to the head of a small architecture firm around the Louisville area last week, and he said that his projects, they do a whole kind of array of architectural design for offices and schools, and he said you can't get masons.
Yeah.
And a lot of skilled construction workers are in short supply. But, you know, we talked to, again, a range of business people and services, and they report difficulty in finding skilled people when they do have an opening. And, of course, you're right. I mean, it percolates through the wage structure.
Well, and from a petroleum standpoint, you mentioned the other higher prices. One of the reasons why, as we've reported before, Jerry, on the show, one of the reasons why we aren't being hit in a drastic way by the higher prices of petroleum is because crude oil is a much smaller, petroleum, I guess I should say, is a much smaller part of our GDP, about half of what it was maybe 20 years ago. And so it's not impacting us that much. But the fact remains that petroleum is the oxygen of the marketplace. There isn't any part of the marketplace that it isn't, it doesn't find itself, is it?
Well, Greenspan's pointed out, I think, pretty clearly that you're entirely right that we produce more GDP per dollar of petroleum than we did, much more than we did 20 years ago. But when you have a budget that's based on a cost of oil at $40 a barrel, let's say, or $50 a barrel, and now it's at $63 a barrel and doesn't show any signs of declining, the relative increase is going to hit you, even though you can look back and say, gee, we're a lot more efficient than we were 20 years ago.
Yeah, and so, folks, and based on what Kiplinger sees, I think, Jerry, we need to be planning on holding our petroleum budgets up for next year, don't you think?
Yeah, well, we see, for example, gasoline, the average price we see this year, and this is an annual average, is $2.10 a gallon. It's just a benchmark because, as you pointed out, it's higher than that now. But we see gasoline next year on average at $2.20 to $2.25 a gallon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's a 10 to 15 cent a gallon increase. Electricity costs about 4% higher next year.
You know, one thing that I noticed recently in the last week or so, Jerry, is the extreme profits that the gas companies, the petroleum companies, are reporting. That's after a while. I think consumers are going to get tired of that. Don't you think?
Well, you know, maybe we'll see an energy company buying a circus like we did in the late 1970s, early 1980s. This goes in cycles, and of course, you know, we haven't heard windfall profits in a while. I think with this administration and this Congress, you, especially with President Bush's background in energy, I don't think you'll hear that kind of talk very much.
Right.
Consumers might feel that way. But
the consumers, that's where it's going to come from. Stand by, Jerry. We're going to take a quick break. We've got more to come with our good friend Jerry Idizac. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot. Here's Jerry and the Pacemakers to take us out.
Your heart may be broken tonight. He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining us. Thanks for hanging around with us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Jerry Idizac is our guest. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter. Jerry, back to the interest rates that we're experiencing, back to our costs, our business costs that we've got a budget for. We've just had 10 increases in a row. Now, the last time we had this kind of an increase was when Mr. Greenspan was trying to burst the stock market bubble. And he certainly did that, didn't he?
Well, yeah, he did. Let's hope that the current housing bubble, if there is one and there's widespread disagreement, let's hope that the outcome is much different.
Well, it seems to me that that's the bubble. I mean, I keep thinking, I don't mean to be disrespectful, folks, because Mr. Greenspan's a smart guy and he's done a lot of good things for this country. But if you ever, you remember the movie The Jerk, where he was working, Steve Martin was working at the gas station, and the sniper was shooting at him, and he kept hitting the cans, the oil cans that he was standing beside. And all of a sudden, you know, Steve Martin's character said, "He's mad at these cans." and so Mr. Greenspan is mad at these bubbles. I think that's what we've got going on here. And he's now decided that we have, apparently, according to his comments, he's now decided that we have a housing bubble. And it seems to me that he's going after the housing bubble. And I sure hope that whatever he's doing, you know, I know that housing probably needs to abate somewhere in some parts of the country. But I hope that we don't have a collapse, because when you have a real estate collapse, you know, I think that's worse than a stock market collapse. What do you think?
Oh, it would be by far. I mean, we don't have a long history, a frequent history of real estate problems. They've been mostly regional when they've hit, rather than national.
Mm-hmm.
But they hit right through Main Street. I mean, you know, your real estate agents, your mortgage finance people,
appraisers, and surveyors, and
construction people.
Exactly. Home improvement companies. It just ripples. I mean, it would shut the economy. It wouldn't shut it down, but it would be a lot worse than a stock market crash. And the thing is, there's no question that in some markets there's irrational exuberance, isn't there?
Well, the other thing is, I mean, you know, we've written about housing extensively, and we don't see an outcome anything like the stock market. I mean, for one thing, if you live in your house, you don't evaluate your house every 6 months and say, should I buy it or sell it and move on. It's difficult to move. So when house prices flatten out, or even if they were to decline, which is rare historically, and people just live a little longer, or they have their house up for sale and they take it off the market. So it would slow the economy, but it wouldn't have quite the immediate downdraft effect that you saw in the stock market.
Right.
The troubling thing is, if it slows the economy, there isn't another area really that you can turn to stimulate.
That's right.
Bob said it. I mean, when
the automobile industry is pretty much punked out right now, and we've always, you know, and historically we've been able to turn to that industry for a large part of our economy. It's not as robust as it used to be, and so I don't know what ball game he's looking at. I know he's a lot smarter than I am, but you know, Jerry, from my perspective, I just keep coming back to the fact that over half of this economy is created by small business owners, and right now we're getting squeezed by higher prices that we can't always pass along, by petroleum prices that we had no way to there's no way for us to have anticipated the prices that we're having to pay right now for petroleum to keep our fleets on the road, and then the interest rates, because small business owners are tethered to our banks for working capital. And you take all three of those things, and that's the hat trick that we were hoping would not happen. That we're getting squeezed by those three things, and it's really making it tough. And what I said this week, earlier this week, Jerry, is that what I'm afraid he's going to do is kill the goose that's laying the golden egg, and that's small business owners.
Well, that's a sobering thought. It's certainly when he asserts that he's not really targeting a bubble, that he didn't target.
He also said he wasn't targeting the stock market too, didn't he?
Right, right. Had the effect of it had that effect though. Whether he's targeting housing or not, he is raising interest rates,
right,
and has a direct effect on small businesses.
And that's one of the things we're going to talk about when we come back is that the 30-year bond is back, ladies and gentlemen. It went away for a while. Now it's back. When we come back, Jerry's going to tell us why we should care, and he thinks we should. And other issues we're going to talk about with Jerry Adizek after these messages. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And let me tell you about, and Jerry will help me with this. I want you to know about Kiplinger's letters because I think they're very important publications in the marketplace. I've known about Kiplinger's letters as long as I've been in the marketplace. And, of course, you guys are about to celebrate. I think you're about to celebrate your 82nd or 83rd year in September, aren't you, Jerry?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been around a long time. Mr. Willard Kiplinger, who's the grandfather of Knight Kiplinger, who's now the editor-in-chief. Jerry, the publication we work off of, the Kiplinger letters, comes out every week, and then there are three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And then you guys also publish a magazine, too, don't you?
Well, we also have a monthly retirement report.
I forgot about that.
And then a monthly magazine. That's mm-hmm. correct. Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, which
yeah.
is a lot of useful information for your listeners as investors and savers, and also spenders. Tips on college tuition, car insurance, health insurance.
Investing. A lot of investing stuff.
Mutual funds.
And also. Folks, you can subscribe at the website, Kiplinger.com, but you can also check that website out for free stuff. They got a lot of good stuff you don't have to pay for, but you may want to, if you subscribe, you can go back into the bowels of the website and read what Jerry writes. Also, there's a phone number. Do you have that phone number, Jerry, the subscriber phone number?
You caught me off guard.
Well, we'll get that out in just a little bit. Jerry, let's move on over and talk about the 30-year bond. Now, why?
Oh, hang on.
Have you got it? Okay, go ahead.
800-544-0155.
Okay, right. Don't forget to ask for that 30-day free trial. Jerry, we had a 30-year bond for like 1,000 years, and then all of a sudden they decided to do away with it. Why was that?
Well, we had a 30-year bond, I think, from the 1970s or thereabouts.
Okay, maybe not 1,000 years.
But for a long, long, long time, they decided to do away with it because we didn't have deficits anymore. We had surpluses. Remember those days?
Yeah, and the bond was helping to fund the deficit, wasn't it?
Yeah, just to pause a second, the surpluses that we had included a big annual surplus in payroll taxes for Social Security.
Right.
We didn't really, if you took those, if you subtracted those from the equation, we never really did have a surplus.
That was one of the, that's one of the great lies the government tells us, isn't it, about how the money's being accumulated, isn't it?
Yeah, we could do a separate show on Social
Security. And I have before, by the way. Go ahead.
I'm sure you have in the trust fund. But mm-hmm. having said that, when the budget was in surplus counting payroll taxes, late in the Clinton administration, they decided to drop the 30-year bond because they had much diminished needs for financing their debt. And so they then went to the 10-year Treasury as the longest issue. And then we quickly reversed the situation in a matter of a couple of years to where the deficits and the debt are rising again. And the government decided for a couple of reasons, including corporations with pension fund liabilities also wanted a 30-year maturity to match their liabilities.
Their obligations.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the deficit.
It's a handy tool, isn't it?
It is. And the government, the Treasury, says the deficit had nothing, the return
right.
of rising deficits had nothing to do with the decision.
Well, everybody.
Wall Street says it did.
Yeah. Well, everybody, every economist that I've interviewed on the show has said that bringing back the 30-year bond was a good idea. Steve Forbes has said that a number of times on the show, that he thought we needed the 30-year bond again. And it's just a handy tool. It also helps, as you guys point out, it reduces the rollover risk. Tell us about what that means.
Well, when you have a maturity that or a bond that's going to mature, and it matures, then you have to buy a new bond.
Right.
And if you think that interest rates are going to be rising, you would like to go out with a longer maturity. But when you've got the maximum is 10 years, economists or your chief financial officer may be saying, well, you know, you'd be better off buying a longer maturity, but it's not readily available.
Right.
So this
helps people. People make a longer-term commitment, and for a lot of reasons, people can make better plans with it. It's just a much handier tool and a lot more substantial tool than the 10-year bond is. Jerry, let's move over and talk quickly about on page 3, the middle of page 3, you guys report that there's going to be a work slowdown, perhaps, next month by the air traffic controllers. Can you tell us about that?
Well, our air and travel specialist, Martha Craver, looked into that, and their contract with the FAA expires. And, of course...
Are we going to need to bring Reagan back?
No, I was going to say, of course, I'm sure a lot of your listeners remember the Reagan era and the strike and the aftermath of that and what that did to unions and so on and so on. And we don't envision anything near that. We think the controllers are going to work by the rules. But that'll enable them to extend delays, and it could go on for a period of some months.
Well, and air traffic is increasing too, isn't it?
Starting next September, yeah, the airlines are doing well in terms of passenger travel and passenger volume. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they're getting killed by talk about fuel costs and how it hurts people.
Absolutely.
They're getting clobbered by that, but the skies are full.
This may be something you want to pay attention to, folks. If you see it in the paper or wherever you see it, start paying a little more attention to what the controllers are going to be doing, and we'll see how Mr. Bush handles it, if he handles it like his predecessor, Mr. Ronald Reagan. Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back with Jerry Idizac. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and St. Louis, get ready. Brace yourself. The Small Business Advocate is coming to St. Louis. I'm leaving today. Going to be there for the next 2 days, broadcasting live from St. Louis and with the Association of Chamber of Commerce Executives at their annual conference. Really looking forward to whipping it up on behalf of Chambers of Commerce all over the country. And we're going to have a lot of fun. You're going to meet some of those people too, by the way, folks, on the show for the next 2 days. And I know you're going to enjoy hearing what they have to say, because these are regular folks just like you. Jerry Idizac's a pretty regular guy too, and he's our guest this hour and sitting in for Joan Pride. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Jerry, thanks for doing a good job today.
Oh, you're welcome. I really enjoy it.
Well, I appreciate that. And we got a little more work to do, though. Let's talk about public spending. The highway bill was, highway bills are kind of interesting. They're much needed, but they actually oftentimes turn out to be pretty pretty porky, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Although, one man's overpass is another man's vital method of getting around the local infrastructure.
Right. And so what are some of the things, what was you, were you telling me that, you were telling me a little story about what the president was saying about the highway bill?
It was one of his advisors.
Okay.
Asked about the high price tag, and which was a little bit higher than Bush.
200 and?
I think it was 85.
285, something like that. Billion.
He wanted it a couple of billion less, which, as they say in Washington, is a rounding error.
Right.
But there had been some talk that, how strong he was going to hold the line, and one of his advisors I heard on the news this morning was saying, well, we held the line. If it hadn't been for the president, there were some people in Congress who wanted a $400 billion bill. And I thought, now that's a novel point of view. You know,
right.
They wanted to spend $400 billion, and we held the line at $285 billion.
$285 billion, Colorado, Oklahoma, Virginia, Illinois, Wisconsin, Louisiana. You guys point out a lot of different projects that are going to be going over there on for highway projects over the next few months.
Well, yeah, and the highway folks, the construction people and the contractors have been pushing for the renewal of this bill for a long time, mm-hmm. or their new bill. And in pure economic terms, I mean, a lot of that money pumping into the system is will help the economy. And so if there is, as we talked about earlier, a softening or a deceleration or even a outright slowdown or decline in housing construction, for people in the construction industry, some of the business may be offset by the spending on roads, bridges, et cetera.
Right. You also point out that there, and this, I love the way Kiplinger turns the phrase here, Jerry, Congress is about to open the spigots on some 700 water projects.
Right, including rebuilding 7 locks and dams along the upper Mississippi and Illinois rivers.
Right.
Close to $2 billion for repairs and $1.6 billion to restore the ecosystem. I'm sure right. You're a fan of restoring the ecosystem.
Of course I am. Yeah, I am. Absolutely. Let's move over and talk a little bit about, on page 4, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the Middle East. At the bottom of page 4, you guys have a report on Saudi Arabia. And as many know, King Fahd, the son, one of the sons, I guess maybe the oldest son, of the founder of Abdulaziz Saud, was the founder of Saudi Arabia. King Fahd died in his mid-80s recently, but and the transition seems to be pretty calm over there, Jerry. And of course, we know, King Fahd has been sick for a number of years, and his brother, the crown prince, had been really the de facto king, hadn't he?
Hello.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was just saying that the thing is it seems like Abdullah, who's the half brother, he's there now, but he's probably 81 or 82.
Yeah, he's close to 80, and his half brother Sultan is around 80.
Right.
And successors beyond them are in their 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Many in ill health. And so we point out that while the apparent picture is one of calm and smooth transition, because of the age of the next few people who would mm-hmm. likely be successors and their medical conditions or health conditions, that the handoff to the generation younger than them, as we put it, could be messy.
Well, I've been saying for a long time that the most dangerous place in the Middle East, the next dangerous place in the Middle East is going to be Saudi Arabia, and I really believe that. Hey, Jerry, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Okay, good luck. Have
fun. We'll see you next time. Jerry Eidizac, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back one of these days. Got to go for this hour. I'll see you in St. Louis next time we talk. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.